Hey, Podnutians, welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 215. Podcast all about Linux, the big, the small, the ins, the outs, the important and the not important. Okay, first thing I just want to talk about is GNU World Order. If you have not heard of that podcast, you've not been listening to me for long, GNUWorldOrder.info. The next to last episode was titled IBM Acquires Red Hat. Listener feedback, including Git Stash, Lutris, and recommendations for Game Jolt. I like Klaatu talking about big topics like this. He referenced an article about IBM. It was actually by John Mad Dog Hall from Linux-magazine.com. And if you do not know who John Mad Dog Hall is, all you got to know is he's really old. He's been around a really long time. He's a definite firm believer in more freedom-based, capital F, freedom-based things than not. But he also understands business is business, and business has to make money. In the article, he basically says, look, this is what happens with good companies. Good companies get bought out. Bad companies go out of business. So Red Hat buying IBM is not a bad thing. IBM buying Red Hat is not a bad thing. He also said, let's look at IBM's history on open source and about all of their open source things. And he's pointing out some pretty positive things that they've done in the past. So what I'll say is, I really hope they continue to be like that. I really hope that his point of view is right. And I really hope that he is correct in his thought process that they are going to continue doing the quote-unquote right thing and letting Red Hat be Red Hat, and letting Red Hat continue to just annihilate, destroy, and completely own the market. Their financials are great. They're making more money and more money and more money because they offer the best support, bar none, in the world. And I want to thank Klaatu again for putting out GNUWorldOrder.info podcast. Really good stuff. Really nice guy. Okay, next we have an email here from Chuck. It says, good to hear you're back. I enjoy hearing about the possibility of a Linux phone. I was disappointed when Ubuntu dropped their phone and tablet OS offerings. I would appreciate hearing about new Linux phones and tablets if you get news of them being available. I think it would be a good show topic, if only for a quick mention, if there was something new to share. Another show topic I like is when you did a list of search engines that honor user privacy. This was a while back. Maybe Cody did it. I would like to hear a similar list for email providers. If there are any open source FSF certified platforms subject to records retention laws. Other factors of interest to me are Libra open source and privacy. As I know little about this, but would like to move away from ISP email and the user as a product email, but don't know where to turn or what to look for. Also, the new FSF, Respect Your Freedom Certified Hardware, is an interest to me. Maybe a router or computer from BIOS and drivers through operating system. Last I looked at Freed PC was about 10 years ago. There were a few like Purism that I was excited about, but after reading the details, I lost interest due to hype and delays and have not checked in on them in a while. Not sure what I would trust them now. Maybe if they actually finish their laptop. I'll ask you for a Think Penguin coupon at a later time. I can't swing the order right now. Thanks for the show and info for considering the above. A very good email, Chuck. Thank you very much. Me too, when it came to the Ubuntu Touch OS that was designed for phones and tablets, I honestly thought they were on the path to doing something really right. But then companies, you know, have to do what's right for companies, and they decided it was too much of an investment right now to carry on, so they basically dropped it all. I do believe that they dropped all the code out in the public so anybody can pick it up. People have picked it up, but it basically was Unity. Everything Unity was about convergence from desktop to tablet to phone, and when they dropped Unity, that became a non-starter. There is a brand new Linux tablet on Kickstarter. I hate mentioning things on Kickstarter. I really do, because they're not real. They're not orderable. They're not, you know, you can order today, get it tomorrow. You're basically giving money, hoping that it will come to fruition with zero guarantee. I will put the link to that tablet in the notes. It's interesting. They're pushing the fact that it runs Android, but it is running Raspberry Pi and Odroid type hardware, which means it should be very Linux friendly. And I understand them pushing it as being an Android tablet because that's where the money's at. That's where people want it at. We are the niche. We want Linux instead. So I will try to have a link in the notes for that. The search engine things, I will say, the exact same search engines are still good. There has been very little movement when it comes to that kind of topic. I will say, if you listen to the last Android App Addicts, I want to say 453, one of the apps that Eric brought was called The Lookup, and The Lookup list every bit of 50 plus search engines. Some of them are only looking for images. Some of them are only looking for PDFs, but they definitely made it very clear in that interface which ones of those search engines were privacy focused. Because it's basically like a one-way transaction when it comes to search engines. It's much easier for them to be more privacy focused. The next thing you talked about was email providers. I'll just say this. There is no such thing as a true privacy-focused email provider, because they can't be, because they're two-way communications dealing with unsecured servers. So hypothetically, if you and me both are on ProtonMail, ProtonMail is one of the email providers that was literally in Mr. Robot, and it is a privacy focused email provider. And if you and me are both on that server and you and me send each other's emails, then it is very secure and it is very private, and it is definitely respecting your freedom. But anytime you email anybody outside of that verse of that server, then all privacy is basically thrown out the window. Of course, there is still some privacy, but you lose a whole lot of it. Email was designed from the ground up to not be secure. The only solution to secure email is to not use email. The only way to have a secure network is to not let anybody on it, is to not let it out, is to not let the internet on it. That's the only way to have a truly secure network. So you can use services like ProtonMail. There are other ones out there. The long and the short of it is, if it is any email provider in a country like the United States, then it cannot have any actual guarantee for any length of time to be actual secure and freedom-loving, because all it takes is one warrant from the federal government and they have to hand everything over or grant continued access into their network. So I would just say, the idea of completely anonymous free email is not something that's going to happen. I suggest you literally create multiple email accounts through different services, and you pick each one for each topic. Like, there's my spam email, where when I have to give somebody an email address, I give them that one. There's my family email. I only give to my family members. There's different emails for different purposes is my use case. Next, you were talking about FSF, certified hardware. Man, it is expensive. Man, it is expensive. You have to pay that freedom tax. We had, you know, back in the day, Apple tax, Windows tax, Intel tax. We have all these taxes. Well, the freedom tax is not cheap. I will say my personal hands-on anecdotal experience of dealing with FSF is they are very hypocritical. Everybody in the office has an iPhone that I saw. Nobody in the office seems to actually care about their actual own privacy, but they have no problem in telling other people how their privacy should be. I do know that RMS does everything in his power to adhere to that privacy personally, but he still has to use other devices. He just doesn't own them, kind of thing. So I will say, you can, you know, FSF, hardware certification list. There's plenty of stuff out there, but every time I look, it's literally like 7-year-old IBM ThinkPads being sold for $800, something that I don't consider to be fair or correct. ThinkPenguin, I know the owners, which is why I feel better about them. They still have stuff there. They're still up and running. I always ask people to buy from them is not you're looking forward to get glamorous hardware, but you're looking to support a basic like campaign, a campaign of freedom. And I know those guys, I know they're really good guys. I know they fight for freedom. They actively, literally write the BIOSes themselves. That's how good they are. So I'm a big fan of ThinkPenguin. Personal preference. Nobody else has to use them, but I know that they love freedom. Now real quick, Purism. Purism is not an easy thing that they're trying to do. They're trying to order chips from Intel that purposefully do not have certain things in them that Intel likes to have in the chips, including vPro. If you take a look at vPro, it's basically a network interface, but it allows a lot of things that a lot of freedom lovers don't like. So for a Purism laptop, expect it to be, again, around $3,000. And I don't expect it to be anything grand, great, sexy, or, you know, spectacular. You would buy from Purism because you want to support Purism. I will not give them any money towards their laptop or their phone. Their Android phone, from what I can tell, does use closed source GPU binary blobs, which means it's not secure. Their laptop, from what I can tell, also you need binary blobs for the BIOS and for their chip, which doesn't seem secure either. But I don't know those people. I don't know their intent. So I would say investigate them first as people, investigate them second as a company, then investigate their hardware as a actual product. And if they match all three criterias, then I say go ahead, invest in them and have fun with them. Real quick, just a side rant. I love, and it's supposed to be sarcastic, but you know, my social skills aren't great. I love hearing these podcasts, these Linux podcasts, talk about games, and it's painfully and obviously that they really have no clue of how games actually work, or how code actually gets compiled, or how hardware actually reacts with the kernel, or how software libraries can allow or not allow remapping of buttons and all this kind of stuff. Because I listen to Linux Gamecast. I will say it again. If you care about games and you really want to know the skinny about games, at least check out their notes. Some of the best notes that are out there, period. I also want to just give a quick shout out to 5150. He sent me more than a couple emails I have not got a chance to look at yet. He's on Linux Lugcast. That is linuxlugcast.com. Open format podcast. I believe it's twice a month they hook up and they do recordings with 5150, Honky Magoo, and a couple of other guys. Some guys randomly are there. Some guys are randomly not there. Nice guys. Really smart topics is what I'll say. And I will thank 5150 for all his support throughout the years. I will get to your emails, 50. I promise. Okay. Next thing I want to talk about, to me, was it was literally a shocking discovery, I'll say, I had. I run my audio editing workflow basically completely inside of a virtual machine. That virtual machine is Tango Studio with all of the updates blocked. All I do is I launch the VM, I import the audio files, I do all of the scrubbing, I do all of the cleaning, I do all of the noise cancellation, I do all of the leveling, I do all of the compressing, I then arrange it, and then I export it, and then I transcode it into the proper format, and then I close down the VM. So it's a very function over form event of mine. For giggles, I said, well, let me check out Boxes. I've heard a couple things about Boxes, B-O-X-E-S. And what Boxes is, it's basically a virtual machine front-end tool that's built into GNOME 3. It uses Libvirt, and it uses a couple other technologies on the back end. But the real goal is to not let you, the end user, worry about that. I will say this. It is a glorified, simplistic interface to VMs. And sometimes I will say that's all users need. Okay, we don't always need complexity. We don't always need every option available to us. So if you already are familiar with virtual machines, I encourage people to check out boxes. If you're not familiar with virtual machines, and if you do check this out, understand there are a billion more features available in other solutions. If you need them or not, you will never know until you start to look at them and, you know, until you get into the actual tool. But Boxes was like glorious simplified. It was very easy to use. You basically, you can point to a URL or to a local ISO to do the first time running of the VM and installing the operating system. You can easily change the RAM and the disk size. You could connect to local or remote VMs, which I found very interesting. So you could have all your VMs running on some master server downstairs, but have Boxes front end connect to that instance. I thought that was actually really desirable, is what I'll say. The settings were definitely light. There were certain things I just couldn't find, and I was really only looking for them just to see if I could find them. But I will say I am going to look at migrating my podcast audio post-production work out of VirtualBox and into Boxes. I don't know if I'm going to be successful or not, but I'm going to just give it a shot just because I want to see if I can do it. And I will say the real reason I was looking at a alternate virtual machine player was because I wanted to check out this other Linux distribution that, I mean, if there was ever a distribution that you would look at and it would cause hallucinations because of the amount of colors and splashes and wow stuff going on in this desktop, it would be this version of Linux called Modicia, M-O-D-I-C-I-A, and it's Modicia OS, a Linux desktop ultimate version, and it is its own tagline says the professional Linux desktop solution, an operating system ready to use for every field, amateur or professional, graphic, video, audio, or office at the highest levels of free software. The look and feel has been studied in detail to get a new desktop environment graphically beautiful, neat, and clean. And it's at modiciaos.cloud. Here's what I'll say. There is nothing that this desktop is doing different than some of the French distributions that I've liked in the past. It's just colorful. It's just very colorful. You have the top menu on the left, which is like the cinnamon, the mate type menu. You have a bar at the bottom like Docker, Docky at the very bottom, Plank, whatever you want to call it. They have so many of them. But it also has a full screen GNOME 3 type application browser. So there's multiple ways you can do stuff. What I will say is the number of tools on this distro by default, I found, to be honest, to be very eye-opening, okay? Besides the obvious stuff like GIMP and Audacity, and I believe it was OpenShot, KDE and Live and stuff like that, there was a bunch more. The main reason I would tell somebody to load this desktop is to give them exposure to a whole bunch of different tools that they might not have known of, because there is a good amount in this distro that I don't think people are completely aware with, is what I'll say. If you take a look in the /apt/sources.list.d folder, you will see there is a lot of PPAs installed by default. Yes, this is a Ubuntu based distribution, and there's a lot of PPAs loaded by default. So if security is your main goal, this might not be the best distro for you. If stability is your main goal, this might not be the best distro for you to run full time. But if you want audio editing and video editing and graphics editing inside of a VM, this might be a really good choice is what I'm going to say. And it is currently on the DistroWatch waiting list. So it's not like a full-fledged distro quite yet. It's been on the waiting list for just a little bit of time, but it is there. So hopefully it will make it sooner than later. Okay, next article I'm bringing to basically laugh at and make fun of. I said, I believe the very last episode, how Linux is dead. Linux is boring. Linux is nearly dead as far as desktop excitement is concerned. And I'll say, don't get me wrong, it is unbelievably a viable solution to use as a desktop. But there's no pizzazz. There's no things going on that are really exciting anybody. And here's the example I'm going to use. This is at lifewire.com. And I have found other lists like this. This was just the one that I happened to bookmark. And it's called the Best 10 Linux Apps of 2018. And this is what I'll say. You could have put me in Carbonite in 2016 or 2015, I believe. And I would have known about every single one of these apps. None of these apps on the Best 10 Linux Apps for 2018 are even new, except for maybe one. Okay, here are the apps. Number one, LibreOffice. The best apps of Linux on 2018. Number one, LibreOffice. Okay. Number two, the GIMP. Alrighty. Number three, Firefox. Okay. Number four, Audacity. Mm-hmm. Number five, Evolution. Evolution's horrible. I'll say that in my experience. Number six, Clementine. Okay. Number seven, VLC. Mm-hmm. Number eight, UPM. Okay, this is the only one I'm not completely familiar with, and that's because it's a Universal Password Manager. UPM, Universal Password Manager. I'll just say I'm unbelievably skeptical of all password managers being actual secure unless I see ridiculous amounts of independent third-party auditing, and I don't see that for this one. I haven't looked, but I don't see it. So that was number eight. Let's see. Number nine, VirtualBox. And number 10, Calibre. This is 2018. This is 2018, and this is the best 10 Linux apps. The best 10 Linux apps are the exact same damn apps I've used for probably 5 years. That's not good. That, to me, shows that the ecosystem of the Linux desktop is becoming stagnant. It's becoming staled. We're not seeing innovation. Now, the caveat is, I'll say it like this, John Mad Dog Hall said to me, well, he said to us in some group that, you know, software doesn't always need to be upgraded. Software doesn't always need to be worked on. There is a such thing as the software is as best as it's going to be right now. Let's stop playing with it. And I do believe that to a very large degree. I do believe that there's plenty of software that doesn't need upgrades. The example I'm going to use is Thunderbird, because email doesn't change. Email is basically the same thing for 20 years. So once you get to a spot on your email client, you probably don't need to upgrade things unless you insist on adding extra functionality outside just regular old email. So yeah, but maybe we could get something. Maybe we could get, you know, some different apps once in a while to load on our desktop instead of VLC or Clementine. This is to me a very, very sad state of where software is at. But there is definitely more software out there. There is definitely better software out there. There is definitely more exciting software out there. But the clickbait articles are not surfacing them, is what I'm going to say. We as end users, we just have to do a little bit more due diligence in finding the good stuff. And because what I'll say is, when I said Linux is dead, I mean the buzz of Linux is dead. The excitement of Linux is dead. We actually had ourselves believing off and on, you know, 3 years ago, 6 years ago, 12 years ago, we used to have ourselves believing that the year of the Linux desktop is coming. And, you know, we almost all said it tongue in cheek, like it ain't going to happen, but we all really, I think, wanted it to happen to a degree. And I think now more than ever, it's plain and it's obvious. It's not going to happen. Linux on the desktop is very boring. It's very niche. And for it to become exciting, we as end users are going to have to do our own part to make it useful, to make it better. And I'll just say, do not forget everybody. The other shows in the network, you can check them out. Just open up your podcast catcher and search for Podnuts. You'll find topics ranging from computer repair, enterprise computer management, Android application, 3D printing, Raspberry Pi, all kinds of topics. MRP Matt does all kinds of topics. He can talk about anything from missile silos to the new version of iOS, and he definitely has some passion there, and he can talk about passion projects. I will ask everyone again, thanks for the support. Thanks for the downloads. If you can, please support those who support you. And most importantly, never ever forget, if you do not have root, you do not know who does.
Hello and welcome to this podcast from the
Podnuts
World Service. Let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the
Podnuts
World Service are supported by
Podnutsians and
advertising.